giant of limitless power at man's command. And where was it science found that giant? In the atom, a particle so infinitely small that it takes over 100 billion atoms to make up the head of a pin.
This is Out of the Basement, a podcast dedicated to radiation medicine.
This is Dr. Jason Vecta coming at you out of the foggy Vermont mountain basements. I am no longer sure what this weather is doing, but I am sure that the weather also doesn't know what it's doing. Who knows? And here we are with what I'm going to call part one of episode 4. I know this doesn't make any sense. It was never meant to be. It is more me just living out my dreams of pretending like I'm on a 90s sitcom. And so when I'm recording this, and if you're listening to this in the future, this won't make any sense, but on Thursday, April 18th, I will be doing a Q&A sponsored by Extrol, as this whole thing is, but at noon on anything anyone wants to ask. And I was originally going to just do the 4 episodes. And then I thought to myself, you know, if we're going to do a live Q&A, there's probably going to be things that I don't know how to answer, or that I answer poorly or incompletely. And wouldn't it be nice to just instead follow up with a episode answering things that I can't answer in the moment? That would be logical, right? I think that would make the most sense. Now, maybe Thursday will go poorly and nobody will show up, and I'll just talk to myself like I am right now, because I am the king of talking to myself alone in a room. But in advance of that, I've already discussed many bits of the research, because it's impossible to kind of just talk about how to do this. And well, I guess really coding and billing is the only thing I didn't have to talk about research papers for. I think number one, the most important question to answer, or question that I get asked, or not really quite sure how to say that, but in the episode prior that I've talked about the 2023 paper on the laboratory evidence, the in vivo, the in vitro data, that really, I think, would make people understand this better. Because I find that there is a general, well, there's a general misconception about this whole thing, hence why I'm doing this. But a bigger one is this pervasive belief that it's all potentially placebo, and it's only been these clinical papers, and none of them have really been randomized, and it's all retrospective. And I encounter that quite a bit, when in fact, as per usual, people have not actually done any research. They're just kind of going off of it, and they've never even done a PubMed or a Google Scholar. And so if you go and reference that paper, or find that paper that I referenced, that's probably going to put a lot of minds at ease, or at least answer a lot of questions, and that there has actually been quite a significant amount of laboratory mechanistic data that has been done on this. And again, it passes the sniff test of this thing has been done for 125 years. And I think about this a lot in when people throw stones at the TTF device, the NovaCure TTF device for glioblastoma. A common critique is like, okay, sure, those are well-designed trials that shows that it works. But this technology, this mechanism, it doesn't have the robustness of the evidence behind it. So when a new chemo comes out that gives you like a 1 week progression-free survival, and people fawn all over themselves, they can justify that as saying, oh, well, you know, there's decades of clinical research or laboratory research behind chemo. We know how chemo works, but TTF, oh, no, we can't. We need more, just a compendium of evidence. And I would argue there's really nothing in radiotherapy that rivals anti-inflammatory LDRT. There's really nothing. Like, the robustness is here. And, you know, say what you want about it, there's a point where you are just being dogmatic, where you are unwilling to consider this. You either are going to look at the evidence and make your own decision. And if you think the evidence is false, or if you don't believe it based on your review of the literature, that's a different conversation entirely. And I think that's worth every conversation in the world. And so for those people, I would love to hear from you, or hear your perspectives. But most of the time, what I see is people who haven't actually looked at anything, which is actually what I wanted to cover here before the webinar. So again, this lovely miniseries brought to you by the fine folks at Extrol, makers of awesome orthovoltage devices that are a heck of a lot easier to use than a linear accelerator, a heck of a lot cheaper, and are currently being deployed in America for low-dose radiotherapy for osteoarthritis and other things, and getting paid by insurance. Go to their YouTube channel. Seriously, before I even talk to anyone at Extrol, Years ago, I would go to their YouTube channel. And if I liked it then, I'm going to like it now, and you'll like it too. But before the webinar with those folks, in the theme of people not wanting to accept evidence, and I'm going to forgive everyone because it is the era of misinformation and disinformation and cyber hacks, and you are forgiven if you think it's all fake news. But the most common thing I hear about is these dreaded negative phase 3 trials that were done over in the Netherlands back in 2016 and 2018, or basically in the late 20-teens was when they were published. The trials were run earlier. If I hear about these trials one more time, I might jump into an ice-cold Vermont lake and fight Champy, the Loch Ness Monster of Lake Champlain. There were two of them, one that was done on the hand and one that was done on the knee, and they were functionally very similar, and they contained very similar authors. And the senior, I believe senior author on both of them was a man named Philip Hortmans. And given that he is Dutch, I am probably saying that wrong, but they were published in fairly large journals, which is why I think this gained a lot of traction. So I have some of my own theories on this. I don't quite understand where this came from, where if this was done in America, I would go to openpayments.gov and I would see if there was some sort of industry link here. Because as far as I can tell, the authors, and I haven't done this for quite some time now, but I had searched each of the individual authors to see if they had any history in this space or what brought this on, or I'm not quite sure where this came from, because I don't think these people have really done anything before or since. They are in the rheumatology space, and so obviously that makes sense, but these are pretty high impact journals. So to get this sort of obscure topic, maybe it's bigger over there. Like maybe it seems like it's more obscure to me to get into like Lancet rheumatology and stuff, but this is just kind of a mystery to me in the first place. Like, how did this even get started? That was number one. Number two is, why did it get started? Where, and maybe it was just for the love of the game, but let's be real. You know, these were done within the last decade. We don't do science and medicine just because we love science and medicine anymore. That's not how any of this works. You don't get promoted that way. And so there has to be some moat. And I don't mean that in a sort of negative conspiratorial way, but because we all have motives for everything, right? So I just don't get, this seems like it came out of nowhere. You would expect if somebody from Degro, like the German version of Astro, if somebody from Degro had published something like this, or somebody with a track record, or then I would get it. But I don't know. This group just seems totally disconnected from the space otherwise, but there has to be a story there. So somebody knows the story, maybe one of the authors, I assume now, because I said these things, somebody will send this to one of the authors, but I would love to know the backstory for how this got started, because this is not an insignificant thing. One of the things that really annoys me about trials like this is that this is a lot of work. So if anyone's ever tried to do a clinical trial in the modern era, I mean, probably forever, but this is not an easy thing to do. This is not a simple thing to do, which seems very goofy to say, like obvious, but I don't think you truly grasp it until you try to get into the weeds with this. So they put a lot of effort up front, and it's why part of the reason I hate dunking on these trials is simply because they were just a few choices away from having really well-designed trials, and it's frustrating to see. It's like a swing and a miss. I'll probably just quote, it's easier to just quote off the combination paper. So they did the hand one, the knee one, and then in 2020 or in 2019, they published a paper talking about both of them. So it's long-term efficacy of low-dose radiation therapy on symptoms in patients with knee and hand osteoarthritis, follow-up results of two parallel randomized sham-controlled trials. And so number one, whenever anyone brings these papers up, I'm mostly just going to talk about the hand one. And you'll forgive me, sometimes I jump back and forth, but they're very similar in many ways. And if I misspeak on precise aspects of certain elements of the trial, I'll try to not do that. But so in each of these individual trials, so two trials and then the long-term results combined both of them, each trial only had 56 patients. So 28 in each arm. One had 28 in the treatment arm and the sham arm. The other had 28 in one group and 27 in the other group. So this is incredibly small. And whenever you have a sample size like that, the power of the trial is very small, and the probability of a type 2 error is much higher than with a larger study. So a type 2 error is failing to find a significant difference that truly exists, also known as a false negative. And so in the first trial, I think they've tried to fix this a little bit in the second one, but in the first one, at least, the inclusion criteria specified that only patients with quote unquote severe pain syndrome could be enrolled. And that was defined as a pain rating of at least 5 out of 10 on a 1 to 10 scale for at least 15 out of the prior 30 days, despite analgesic and or physical therapy use. And looking specifically at the LDRT arm, you see that 68% of the patients had been at that level of pain for over 5 years. So let's just run that through again, just to drive that home. So you needed to have an inclusion criteria of at least 5 out of 10 pain, despite analgesic or attempts at relief, at least 5 out of 10 pain for at least 15 out of the prior 30 days. And further in the enrollment, at least 68%, 2/3 of the patients in the LDRT arm had this level of pain for over 5 years. That's insane. That is severe pain. And then they had the unfortunate choices of going with 6 gray and 6 fractions. As we talked about in the earlier one, the 1 gray has at this point been shown to be clearly inferior to the 0.5 gray. Now, in their defense, and this is talked about, that was appropriate. So there were guidelines then. DEGRO has changed, but DEGRO is kind of to where we all look, the German group. 6 gray and 6 fractions was indeed the recommended one. So the authors cannot be faulted for that. That was reasonable. I personally have never used 1 gray per fraction. I think the research is pretty clear that the lower dose is better. And in the original papers, they had too short of follow-up, which they tried to address by doing the longer-term follow-up. But the real kicker, the thing that really gets me about these papers, is how they did their statistical analysis and how they defined their outcomes. So for the outcomes, I'm just going to read from the long-term paper because this really seals the deal for me. For both studies, the primary outcome was the proportion of participants who had a response according to the outcome measures in Rheumatology Osteoarthritis Research Society International responder criteria at 3 months, which is specifically either relative improvement in pain or function at least 50% and an absolute improvement of at least 20 of 100 points. That's criteria one, just to say that again. So they only recorded a positive response in LDRT if somebody had a relative improvement in pain or function of at least 50% and an absolute improvement in at least 20 of 100 points in that scale they used. That's crazy. Or they could also have improvement in two of the following: pain, function, or patient's global assessment, relative improvement greater than 20% and greater than 10 of 100 points for absolute pain and function, or greater than 1 of 10 point absolute for patient's global assessment, as added using pain and function subscales of WOMAC or OSCAN questionnaires. That's quite a mouthful. I can't comment too much on that. I think it's a little bit busy, but that's aggressive. Those are aggressive outcomes. That's not saying like a little bit of pain improvement or not even a little bit. That's not even fair to say, but where most of us are out here using VAS, if you look at most pain literature, now defining pain, and again, the author's defense, pain is a very difficult thing to study. That's why we're so bad at it. It's very difficult to quantify. It's very difficult to find an objective measurement that we all agree upon and is standardized and can be compared across studies and so on and so forth. We all know pain is rough. That's aggressive, though. No matter how you define it, that's aggressive. But so you have that aggressive outcome. That's how they're defining it. For their statistical analysis, I'm again going to read right from the paper. Given the nature of the treatment, e.g. radiation exposure, multiple visits in a short period of time, we felt that low-dose radiation therapy should only be rightfully used in clinical practice when its effects are substantial. Therefore, both studies were powered to detect a large effect of low-dose radiation therapy. Using the primary outcome, allowing for a 15% dropout rate, we aim to include 27 patients per group, assuming an expected difference of 40% in the proportion of responders between the LDRT and sham intervention group, 80% power and a 5% alpha level, and that 40% of the sham intervention group would be responders, resulting in a total sample size of 54 per trial. That's incredibly aggressive. I genuinely don't know if there is any treatment that exists that would meet the criteria of this trial, or these trials, this was written to fail. And one, as I've been talking about this whole time, LDRT is not the same as doing 70 and 35 for head and neck, right? This is a breeze. It's six treatments, 15 minutes, minimal side effects. But even if not, even like, we don't even have cancer trial power like this. I just don't know. This is why I'm so suspicious about what brought this on, because to have these outcomes, and then worse, to have these statistical parameters, there is, if the authors or if anyone can point me in the direction of a trial that would have met these criteria, I would love to read it. But so this is why these trials were negative. And this is why I do not listen to anything, any conclusions from these trials, because of course they're negative. So too high of a dose, no second course, an insanely high bar set for severe pain patients. Again, 2/3 had this 5 out of 10 pain despite treatments for more than 5 years. And then this wild statistical powering that was basically guaranteed to fail. I'm just reading this now. I've read this so many times, and even just reading it again right now, I'm kind of taken aback by the level of statistical trickery that was done. I have to assume, and maybe they thought this was reasonable. Maybe there's just nothing else to think about here, but I don't get it. But so that is why I don't think these trials are worth the paper they're printed on, which is good because it's 2024 and we don't print paper anymore, and why you shouldn't either. So we're going to keep this one brief. We're going to end it there with my dismay. Read these trials for yourself. Tell me what you think of them. Tell me if I'm wrong. Tell me if you think this is reasonable. Tell me if you would ever design a trial like this. But otherwise, we will have the recordings. If you can't make the Q&A with XDraw, we'll have the recordings up, and then I'm going to try to do an additional episode reflecting on that. Maybe in the best case scenario, I nail it. I don't stutter. I have all the answers. I crush it. I have yet to ever do that in my life. So I don't think so, but a boy can dream, right? So until then, everyone stay safe and think about doing this in your own practice. It's really not that scary. I'm going to do it to myself. I will literally throw myself on the machine the second I think it's time. Fortunately, I'm not 50, which is generally my age range, but I will do this to myself, my wife, anyone. Just do it. Zap all the joints. It's really not scary. All right. Talk to you guys later.
This has been a Photon Media production. Don't forget to like and subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen to us. Be well and be mom.